Once a U.S. retail titan, the 100-year-old store Sears has filed for bankruptcy. It announced plans on Monday to close 142 more stores after a decade of revenue declines and store closures. Sears once dominated U.S. malls, but has withered in an age of internet shopping. CEO Eddie Lampert, who bought the brand in 2004, had pledged to restore Sears to its glory days. Sears once owned the tallest building in the world and companies that included a radio station and Allstate Insurance.
Birth dates, employer information, and lists of friends. That's just some of the information Facebook admitted Friday was stolen from millions of users in the company's worst ever security breach. Hackers snatching name and contact information from 15 million users. But for another 14 million, the data was more personal, including information about where users went to school and where they work.
Wall Street stands to rebound, but whew, it was a tough couple of days for investors to stomach. A six-day sell-off in the benchmark S&P 500, which reached an all-out selling frenzy by the middle of the week, wiped out $2 trillion in stock market wealth by the time it was over.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's October the 16th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for being with us this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell, and another business day is getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you this morning. In just a few seconds, we'll be joined by our first guest, Deb Westfall at Toffler Associates. Future Shock Forum underway in Chicago. We'll talk about some of the fundamental shifts that not only are happening in society, but in our economies, and how people, especially companies, are preparing for that. We'll talk with Deb first thing this morning, a little bit later in the program. Sherry Preston will be here from ABC News. You know, those home DNA kits that people are using right and left, meant to discover people's lineage, but there's something maybe possibly nefarious going on with them. Sherry, you'll be here in our second segment this morning. We had a little technical problem and a scheduling issue with the guest that we promoed for today. So we'll get the James Beard Foundation and Morton Salt. We'll try to get them on in the future to talk about how they're teaching future chefs how to not waste food. All of that coming, but first let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures on the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 this morning, all looking for gains when the opening bell rings a little bit later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 104 points, almost a half a percent. NASDAQ and S&P futures up from about a third to a little bit more than a half a percent. Around the globe in Europe, markets in Europe are generally mixed this morning. The FTSE is down, the DAX and the CAC are up just a fraction each. And in Asia, markets are generally higher. The Nikkei is going to end the day down 277 points. It's going to end the day up, I should say, 277 points. Those are green numbers. And that's about a percent and a quarter. The Hang Seng is higher by a fraction. And the Shanghai will eventually end the day lower. It's trading lower now. And oil is at $71.18 a barrel, which is down about 60 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. The co-founder of Microsoft, Paul Allen, has died of cancer. Allen, who was 65, went on to become a billionaire philanthropist who invested in conservation, space travel, arts, culture, and professional sports. He died yesterday in Seattle. Bill Gates, his co-founder, says that he's heartbroken at the loss of one of his oldest and dearest friends, talking about his contributions to the PCs that you and I use every day. He was an indispensable part of getting those PCs to be part of our culture. The federal government says that it wants to force drug makers to disclose prices for prescription medicines in their TV commercials. The drug industry's main trade group says drug companies are only willing to disclose those prices on their websites, not in commercials, and that they'll start doing that next spring. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar unveiled a proposal that would apply to all brand name drugs covered by the Medicare and Medicaid programs, which is most of medicines that are advertised. Most Americans don't pay the full price for prescriptions. One reason drug makers have opposed disclosing the listing price of those. Front and center this morning, let's talk about Future Shock. The Future Shock Forum underway, started yesterday, is going today as well here in Chicago. Joining us this morning is Deb Westfall, the CEO at Toffler Associates, which oversees this. Deb, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Yeah, good morning, Steve.
Excited to talk to you today because I know yesterday you had a news conference to unveil some new research that's out there. Let's first talk about that. What is the headline from what you found?
Well, the what we found is there's a shift that's happening or needs to happen to a more human-centric organization. That to be agile and fast and keep up with the pace of change, that organizations really need to take a very different approach to how they structure and govern their organizations.
The concern part of this, though, is that even though respondents want to do these things, make that culture, a commitment to culture, changing the culture, they aren't really wanting to do that, right? There's not the commitment there, right?
Well, I think there's it's difficult. It's difficult, and you need some new models, mental models about how organizations will work in the future. And so it's, the commitment's tough, too short-term focused, not enough future thinking as to where we're going, and it's more just reacting to today's pressures rather than planning out for the future.
Give us a sense of what some of those future shocks, as you guys call them, might be. Are we talking about more robotics, more AI, all of the above?
Well, yes, of course, the technology is something that we all focus on, but more importantly, we see is some real societal shifts that are happening because of the technology. The revolution that we're in is being fueled by the technology. It's not the technology. And I think that's, where we're really missing it inside of organizations is there is real, a real fundamental shift in society and people in their values, their preferences, their priorities. And that is what we need to pay attention to. So the societal collisions, one of the future shocks that we're talking about here, is something to really pay attention to. What is the changing nature of humanity, and how does that change our organizations?
Give us an example of that, because I would imagine people listening right now would be like, okay, well, I think I understand what's going on, what's being discussed, but give us a scenario, if you will, of what you might be talking about.
For sure, and it's the empowerment of people. And you can go back just a few months ago when Google had 3,000 people, over 3,000 people, sign a petition that said, we don't think Google should be working on projects for the Pentagon. And almost threw out a demand that said, if we don't cancel that, we're not going to stay. And these were, important programmers and people that that Google needed to move forward. And Google ultimately pulled out of that project. You know, the voices of people and how they band together and how they come together to voice their values will impact direction of organizations, even as big as Google and as powerful as Google.
Another example of that, and it's just one that's in the headlines this morning at Amazon, the employees at Amazon are concerned about the company doing business with the Pentagon as well. But that CEO says that they're going to go full throttle ahead with work in the Pentagon, saying that without Amazon, the Pentagon might not be able to succeed at its mission. What happens when you have a CEO or leadership of a company that disregards what the people want?
Well, this will all play out, right? Because we're just in this, the emergence of this future shock and the more and more voices. I mean, look, the 7 billion people on the planet, we're to that point where we're all, you know, we're almost all connected. What is it, 3-4 degrees of freedom from each other? We can communicate to each other. We can we can rally. We can become activists. It's to be seen how this will play out. But more and more companies are having to listen, not only in things like, well, we don't want to work for the Pentagon, but simpler things of these are the type of benefits that we want, or these are the type of structures, or this is the type of collaboration. So it will play out, and it is to be seen, but this is, you know, this is one of those future shocks we need to pay attention to.
And we're on this morning with Deb Westfall, CEO of Toffler Associates, talking about the Future Shock Forum that's underway in Chicago. And CEO of Toffler Associates talking about the Future Shock Forum that's going on in Chicago. Deb, yesterday, I know you were on the stage with Beth Comstock, vice chair of GE. The conversation focused a little bit on imagination as we look to the future. What kinds of things are you imagining as we move into this future period?
Well, it's interesting because we were actually talking about the imagination gap that's happening or that exists within companies. And so we spent a lot of time with, talking about leadership's responsibility to be future focused, to look at what's happening out there in the markets, to challenge their assumptions about the future, and to really empower the organization at large to take risk and to be change makers.
It almost feels like the C-suite needs an office for imagination. Somebody whose job it is just to think about all of the stuff that might impact the organization moving forward into the future. Are more companies thinking about that or doing that?
Well, I think there is, and that may be one of the problems. It's not just one person or an office that needs to do that. It really needs to be a part of an organization's DNA to be able to, sense the market, sense the understanding of the outside environment, and bring that back into the organization to the implications that are, that might be there. So it's an easier answer to say, one person, one office. It's really hard to reorganize your organization at large to be able to do that. And that's really what is needed for the future, for an organization to be successful.
We talked earlier about the people who work in the organization, but the cost of not being resilient and moving forward and taking a handle of all of these things could be very costly to shareholders and to the company from a financial standpoint, can't it?
Yeah, it really can, because, the change is coming faster and faster. This is, as Beth mentioned yesterday, it's never going to slow down. It's as slow today as it will ever be. It's only going to accelerate. And this change is disruptive. Disruption is coming from all different places, not just within an industry, but outside an industry, will affect you. And so the cost at not being future-focused, not challenging, not being change makers could be very severe to an organization. So, it's a tough dynamic. Making your numbers, making sure you're hitting all your milestones in the short term, but yet being, looking out over the horizon as to where you need to go. It's a balance, but leaders are going to need to learn how to balance this short term, long term view and bring that, bring that successful, balance into the organization.
As with any major movement, it's that first step that matters, getting going. Do you have any advice this morning for people who are in that position, organizations, the folks who are in charge of getting this ball rolling, how they can get that ball rolling?
Well, I think you mentioned it earlier, Steve. It's just, start to consider a small group or, you know, one or two people inside the organization to wrap their heads around how would we do this? You know, how could we bring this kind of thinking, this kind of movement inside our organization? And that's a start. It's not the end by all means, but that is the start. And you know, the C-suite, as you said, needs to provide top cover and allow that to happen. It's not an easy thing, and it's not going to produce, you know, short-term results really quickly. But you know, that is a start. Is allowing for that thinking to start taking root inside your organization and nurturing it.
It's the Future Shock Forum 2018, Tackling Tomorrow's Critical Challenges. Deb, I know the event continues today. Is it too late for people to come and take part?
No, it's you know, it's not open. It's kind of a invitation only. Mm-hmm. But if people get on our website and you know, submit their name, we would get to them really quick, and for sure, we'd love to have you know, smart thinkers come and engage in this very diverse discussion that we're having. We've got an amazing guest list here, over 70 people from various different industries in different markets, all talking about the convergences and the future shocks that are happening. So, yes, go to our website and we'll get back to you.
All right. Deb, good talking with you this morning. All the best to you and everyone at Toffler Associates.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. This is great.
Deb Westfall, the CEO at Toffler Associates. Their website is tofflerassociates.com. We're also going to link out to the page where you can request an invite to the last day of this session today, the Future Shock Forum 2018 happening in Chicago. It is 5:31. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. Chicago startup Shopping Gives wants to let any e-commerce brand offer a way for customers to donate to worthy causes simply by making a purchase. Shopping Gives turns e-commerce checkouts into micro-giving platforms by letting shoppers easily select charities to donate to while they're shopping. And Kanye West recently spoke with Howard Tolman and students at the Kaplan Institute at IIT, where Tolman is now the executive director. Tolman, the former CEO of 1871, shared pictures on his blog showcasing a brainstorming session between West and the school's design students and faculty. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Those home DNA kits that people are using to find their lineage have been helpful in that regard, but they have grown into something more. And the question is it good or bad? Joining us this morning, Sherry Preston of ABC News. Sherry, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. I think we should check you and I's DNA lineage going back to the Saluki days and then Champagne Urbana days,
yeah,
correct?
Absolutely. We should let our listeners know we go way back to the late 1980s, I believe, in Carbondale.
We both went to Carbondale. And then when you worked at WLW, remember that, in Champaign?
Right, uh-huh.
And I worked at a little teensy tiny station, Z95, which is no longer, where the Z is for Zeppelin. But we would listen to your news because you did news so well. I'm not kidding you, Steve. We would listen and we would go, God, where they get that story? Where they have that?
Right.
That's how good you were.
And oftentimes you and I were racing together in separate cars to breaking news on a daily basis.
To teacher strikes and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah,
so good to talk to you again.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
Here.
I hope you're well.
I'm doing well, and I hope you are too. Good times. It's nice to go down memory lane. You know, I have not done one of these DNA tests yet, but I know a lot of people in my family have, Sherry. I guess the people have good intentions when they take these tests, but what's going on with where they've become?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you've done one, Steve, because you can find, these scientists have looked at this and say that you can match people to a third cousin or closer, even if you yourself have never done the DNA test. Other people in your family have, other distant relatives have. One scientist tells Scientific American that if you think of your family like the layers of an onion, when you get to the distant relatives, the chances of a link going back to you are a whole lot higher because that onion gets bigger. So there's other people who have done the DNA testing, and yours might already be out there. The majority of us, it is, even if you have never done it. I mean, so it's something that you're kind of going, well, how can they do that? But what they do is they put the information in, and then it comes up, and then your family tree is there.
It doesn't seem like that's a big deal if it's all kept under lock and key and nobody else can see it, but I bet you that's not happening, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can use this for not good things. Here's an example. I've got relatives were there in Illinois, and my father-in-law called us recently to say that he had got a phone call from somebody who, it sounded younger, said, "Hey, Grandpa, this is our son saying, 'Hey, Grandpa, I'm in jail. I got in trouble for a DUI. You need to send me money right away.'" He started talking to him for a while, and finally he said, "What's your middle name?" And the person on the other end couldn't give the middle name, so he hung up, and he called us, father-in-law called us, we called the local police, and they said, yeah, people are using these for scams like this. They're using this and stuff that they other things that they found online, information about you that, you might not have your identity stolen, but it might be used for something like this that other people are using it for. So it's a little scary.
And the other thing that's scary about this, too, I think it's good and scary at the same time, is how law enforcement is using some of this. I know recently there was the story about the serial killer that was tracked down, but I'm guessing police departments can use some of this information to track down a suspect, good or bad, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can think of it in terms of, if you think of it in terms of the Golden State Killer that you're talking about, police actually submitted DNA from crime scenes and they put it into a public genealogy database and they hit upon a distant relative of somebody who they thought might be this guy. Then they did the stakeout. Then they were able to arrest that 72-year-old former police officer who was charged with the decades-old crimes. So that can be used for that. It can also be used for, however, if people are saying, well, what about in the future? If police don't like me because I'm protesting or something, maybe you got something that is against what the government's doing. They could take your DNA test, search that, look to find out who you are, and then, correspond to there. Could be other things happening as well. So, yeah. I mean, it's all out there, and if you think about everything that's out there, all the data that's out there, whether it's from Facebook and Twitter to DNA testing, it's kind of scary.
It's more than scary. I know it's overused, but to say the genie's out of the bottle on this, the question I was going to ask is there something legislatively that can be done to protect this a little bit better, or is this just the new normal now?
I think you would have to push for that. The genealogy is out of the bottle. Get it? I think that you would have to push for that. You would have to have, somebody do that. And when you've got a situation, like take what happened with Elizabeth Warren yesterday, very publicly using, the information from her genealogical background, to advance her, whatever she, politically or whatever, to prove that she does have that in her background. I mean, if you're going to do that, you're going to look to lawmakers to pass some sort of law like that to do that. You're going to have people push for that, and it's going to have to be. I mean, so far we haven't gone very far and done very well when it comes to privacy issues, whether it be in our online profile or our genealogical profile. So, I mean, that's something that people would have to push for if they feel strongly about it.
And it feels like we're the next step is going to be the pre-crime law department. That movie with Tom Cruise where they were able to predict crimes before they happened based on all that data. That's probably the next thing that's coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Minority Report was based on a great story by science fiction writer Harry Cruz, and his, the things that he was writing about 50 years ago are many of them coming true now. But, yeah, looking and going, how can we predict that this person will do this based on, their profile and their genealogical profile? I'm not an expert on that. I can't predict it, but one can only think that, you know, look where we've come just in the past 10 years and where we may go with artificial intelligence and everything else in the next 10.
All right, Sherry, good stuff. And again, good talking with you. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Okay, take care, Steve. Have a good one and have a great day. And I'm sorry, I didn't want to say it. I was going to say go Brewers, but I won't. I won't.
It's all right, go
okay,
Brewers.
Okay, take care.
Sherry Preston
okay,
with ABC News with us this morning from New York.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pulling toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures up 138 points, now over 0.5%. S&P futures up about 0.5% as well. NASDAQ futures up more than 0.5%, nearly 48 points. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Looking at yesterday's weekly harvest progress reports, no question that rain activity slowed the combines the past week. Only 38% of the nation's soybean acres have been harvested. Only 39% of the nation's corn acres been harvested. But here are the two numbers that really jumped out at me again this week. The corn harvest in Illinois, 71% complete. But across the Mississippi River in Iowa, only 17% of the corn harvested. In Illinois, 60% of the soybean crop harvested as of Sunday. Across the Mississippi in Iowa, only 19%. Indiana showing 51% of its soybean crop harvested and also 51% of its corn acres harvested. Meanwhile, they're planting in South America and making speedy progress in planting the crops in Brazil. Soybean crop, a record pace. 20% of the projected soybean area in Brazil is planted as of last Thursday. Previous record pace, 2016, when Brazilian farmers had planted 18%. Of the acres. Now, today is opening day for Sunbelt Expo in Moultrie, Georgia, and it will happen, and it will go on for 3 days. Storm damage from Hurricane Michael minimal, and the show is ready to open. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will attend today and will speak at noon. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now, a couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Security researchers say an estimated 35 million voter records from 19 U.S. states have been offered for sale on the dark web. The researchers say the offering does not mean voter databases have been breached. The records could have been stolen from resellers who buy voter data from states for use by campaigns and get out the vote efforts. Policies vary by state on who can buy such records, which typically include phone numbers and addresses, sometimes even voting histories. Commercial use and publication are generally prohibited. A think tank report says the British government will have to spend an extra $19 to $20 billion a year on public services by the year 2022-2023 if it is to deliver on Prime Minister Theresa May's promise to end austerity. And an analysis of Britain's public finances, the Institute for Fiscal Studies says May's ambition looks incompatible with another major aspiration to balance the books in the UK by the mid-2020s without substantial tax increases or much stronger economic growth. The nation's second largest health insurer has agreed to pay the federal government a record $16 million to settle potential privacy violations in the biggest known health care hack in U.S. history. The personal information of nearly 79 million people, including birth dates, social security numbers, medical IDs, all exposed to that cyber attack that was discovered by the company in 2015. Officials say the settlement between Anthem, Inc. and the Department of Health and Human Services represents the largest amount collected by the agency in a health care data breach. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, October the 16th. We'll get a look at the Red Book today. We'll also see report on data on industrial production. The housing market index is due. And the JOLTS report, the job opening labor turnover survey, is out. We'll give us a good sense of how the job market and turnover is faring. It's also another big day for earnings. The companies reporting today include Chicago-based United Airlines, IBM, eBay, Domino's Pizza, United Health, Johnson & Johnson, Progressive, all reporting earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Tuesday, October the 16th.